lead guitar.
Blog Talk Radio.
Mm-hmm. Iacocca.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of stuff.
I get all that.
Phil and Bill Show. I'm Bill Kennedy, and this is
Screwdriver.
Tonight's Journey. Our show will be about motorcycle issues, which is pretty broad scope of issues, actually. Always we'll be looking at and discussing motorcycle laws and biker rights, especially roadside stops. And as Bill Kennedy always says,
just shut up.
Thank you, Phil. If you people pay attention to that, don't convict yourself. Phil and I are both proud Americans and veterans. We decided that Hitler wouldn't let us have this forum, Stalin wouldn't let us have this forum, Pol Pot wouldn't, Ho Chi Minh wouldn't, well, maybe let Jane Fonda, but he certainly let Phil and I do it. All right, Phil, I'm coming back again. Let me tell you what we're doing real recently right here. I got two events coming up, and I'm going to tell you about one event, which is going to happen before the second event, so I'm doing them backwards. We have an event here on Wednesday, April 14th through April 18th. We're bringing the Vietnam Movement Wall here to Oceanside. This is the American Veterans Traveling Tribute. We are going to have, it's the 80% replica on the wall in D.C. We're going to have gold tags for everybody that wants them. We're going to be discussing, we're going to have computers with names, software, printer to print out bio sheets with space for name rubbing. We're going to have sales of collectible merchandise. We're going to also display, here I go back again, beside the Vietnam Wall, we're going to have a Walk of Heroes collection. We're going to have a World War II tribute collection. We're going to have a Korea collection. And we're going to talk about 9/11 also in here. This is a program we're going to be doing on April 14th through the 18th. Now I'm going to jump backwards in time for 1 second, because the week before that, we have a run here in my shop. It's to support the Paralyzed Veterans Association. Throughout the course of this show here, you'll hear Phil and I talking about the veterans programs we support, and we support them all. We're going to have a run on April 11th, the Sunday before, and I know you guys can't all make this, but I want you to understand what Phil and I are about so you can understand where we're coming from. We're going to have a show, a program in my shop here. We're going to leave the VA hospital in San Diego, La Jolla, if you know anybody down there. We're going to ride up to my shop, and this is to support the Paralyzed Veterans of America. Now, there'll be a polka run, silent auction, food, music, all that stuff. You guys have all heard that before. What I want to talk to you about is a while back I went down to VA hospital and I had a meeting with the paralyzed veterans. And it was a nice meeting. You know, it was all homogenized. We met in a nice conference room. They took me down to the recreation room. They took me to physical therapy room. And I met these guys, you know, missing the arms, missing the legs. And they were all positive and we were all talking. And oh, yeah, I brought two very beautiful women with me, too, so that may have helped a little bit. But when it was all said and done, I waited for everybody to leave, and I walked back to where these veterans were sleeping. They're sleeping two to a room, and when these guys were by, guys and girls, I don't want to admit that, when they were by themselves at night, it was a whole different world. They're just stuck in that hospital. Now, Phil and I try intermittently stop by the VA hospital, and we're going to encourage everybody here tonight, try to find your local VA hospital, walk inside, spend 10 minutes. Just say hello to somebody. If you're lucky enough, like Phil and I, we like to bring some dancers down from local clubs. Seems to make those guys a little happier than just talking to Phil and I. Talk about where you're from. Find out who these guys are. You got to remember, they're there for some of them for the rest of their lives. Some of them are Vietnam era, some of them are career heroes. Their families have grown up. They have nobody left. They're in the hospital. And granted, the hospital's given them good help, but they're still lonely people. 5 minutes of your time as you're traveling to and from, stop in your local hostel, say hello. It's not that much, okay, guys? Now, I want to talk just briefly about, I want the bikers to listen up. We must restore our faith in one another and take back the faith we have placed in our government. If we need a helping hand, we must look not to those who have spent us to the brink of bankruptcy, but to the end of our own arm. We must discover self-reliance. We have evolved into a highly specialized predator, preying on the victims of happenstance and accidents. The lawyers and litigations have replaced the stone axe and the bow and arrow. They are now the weapons by which we destroy our friends and colleagues and neighbors. It's time for us to step up into our progression into strong individuals, strong families, and strong neighborhoods. Try that, guys. You might like it. Now, I'm not picking on the lawyers. Lawyers are doing a great job out there. But what I'm trying to say to you is, like, Phil and I have no legal training at all. We're not the least bit shy talking about here, because this is something we believe in. You can look around your own neighborhoods. You can find out something you can do. Then get another friend, put a couple guys together, make a change in your own neighborhood. That's where it starts. You've all heard of the grassroots program. That's what it's about. It's us. We need the lawyers when we go to court. We don't have to go to court for everything, guys. I'm telling you, look around your neighborhood. What's wrong? Make it right. Now, Phil, what do you want to talk about here? Or do you want to jump in here for a little bit here?
You know, I just read something this morning, and it's, you know, we got to start investigating. As being sovereign citizens, we are treated with the threats of fines and arrests anytime we do anything. I mean, going down to get a loaf of bread or, you know, going out to get a cup of coffee at Starbucks, it's not an easy ride anymore. It's just crazy. I mean, I went out the other day and I did a wheelie with no helmet on, and the guy looked the other way and kept going. So I can't even get a ticket now.
Phil and I were at the police station a while back, and the cops come up and looked at two of us, and he turned around and went the other way. I just didn't want to bother us. Not that we're smart asses, not that we're trying to cause trouble. We just know what our rights are. If the police step over the line, we're going to talk to them about it. We're going to contact their supervisors. This is how you guys can deal with this here. You don't have to be victims. You're an American. I'm an American. These police officers are the same as animal control people. They just got a service to do. They got a ticket to write. It has nothing to do. You go to their bosses. You go to the courts. You go to the juries. You tell these people your side of the story. You do not need to be afraid. This is America. You're Americans. You do not need to be afraid of the police department. This is not Nazi history. This is not Stalin. This is not Russian. I'm even going to talk right now about a damn communism. It isn't communism. This is America. If you let them get away with it, don't blame anybody else but yourself.
Precisely, Bill. You know, once the kind folks who think of themselves as the government, you know, they got a couple of generations on us already, and they're used to their monopoly on the armed forces and everybody else, and, it, you know, there's a lot of coercion going on. And, you know, we're just getting tired of pretending, you know, that we're servants or acting like servants. I'm tired. I'm done. I'm fighting back now. And just to go back to what Bill was talking about, when we came out of the police station, just a little history here. We came out of the police station, and Bill said, "Hey, Phil, if I need to get gas for my bike." So we pulled in. I sat on mine because my tank was full. Bill got off, went in, paid the money, and then come a guy rolling in on the bike. Now, I've never seen a police car anywhere buy gas at a public station. The guy stopped the bike, got off, walked around, looked at us, walked back, got on his bike, waited, drove around the backside, and waited till we pulled out to follow us. We made a right turn, he kept going. So we were waiting for him to get us so we could walk, you know, I could make a phone call and tell those guys, "Hey, come outside. We're right outside the front door with one of your guys."
Over the past years, actually, I'm going to go back a little bit. When I was a very young man, I used to get stopped by the police on a Saturday or Friday night. They would impound my motorcycle, and they'd put me in the local police department station. I'd be released in the morning, around 5 or 6 in the morning. I was never charged. It got to the point that the local tow yard, because they'd have my motorcycle, they wouldn't charge me anything anymore. But I was only 17 when I had my first Harley. No, excuse me, 18 years old when I had my first Harley, and I didn't know any better. It took me a long time to realize I have rights, and as soon as I know my rights, the better I am off. I want to talk to also very quickly.
Who's doing
I got a joke. It's dying. I'm dying. You'll never hear me tell another joke. This is the whole joke for the whole year. This is for all my perverts back east, okay? Oh, okay. Who was this? Philip. That's you.
Yeah.
Saying I'm talking too loud. Philip needs to talk louder. I got to talk softer. Are you ready for the only joke you're going to hear from me all year? Philip, did you hear about the flasher who was thinking of retiring?
No, I didn't, Bill.
He decided to stick it out for another year. Ho! Bada-bing! Bada-bing! You know, it's been killing me. I don't tell jokes. I just had to put that one in there. I guarantee everybody, not another joke. Now, our run we have for the Vietnam, the paralyzed vets, I went down the mayor's office today, and I spoke to the mayor, and I said to him, I called up, you know, did it right. I need a meeting. I wanted him to give me a proclamation making it Paralyzed Veterans Day in Oceanside when we have our events. I talked to him respectfully. We went back and forth. He said, I see what you're doing. I appreciate it. No problem. Now, for the Vietnam moving wall, I then went down and I spoke to a 3-star retired admiral. Called him up on the phone, and he said, yeah, come on down, Bill. We talked about it. He said he'd like to make a speech. I am not a celebrity. I'm not a I'm a businessman, but I'm not any big businessman. I'm not a politician. I'm just a local guy that's taken the time to find out who in my neighborhood is my allies. Who in my neighborhood is not my friend. That's what you guys got to do. You have friends out there. Find them. I tell everybody, whenever we have a new mayor in Oceanside, I give the guy 3 weeks to 1 month. I call up. I make an appointment. I want him to know who I am. I want to know what his policies are for the next year. It's not that I want to hold him accountable. I mean, I'm not anybody but a citizen. But I need him to know. We care about what you're doing. Tell us what you're doing. Are we going to have any change in policies? How are we going to affect this here? What part of the town of Oceanside where I live in are you going to be focusing all the money on? This is what everybody needs to do. Find your politicians. Find your leaders. Walk in and say, well, first make the appointment. Do it by the numbers. Ask for 15 minutes to a half an hour. In my case, they always give me an hour because I talk all the time. You need to find out where our friends are going to be. And I tell you, whatever town you're in, this is absolutely works guaranteed. Again, Phil and I, we're just two guys. We have two Harleys. We're family men, businessmen, but we just said enough is enough. Phil and I did not belong to any organization before. Phil is a member, active member of Bolt. Correct,
mm-hmm.
Philip?
Correct.
I am not a member of Bolt. It's my own choice why. I simply think that many organizations, I believe that many people think they're more important than the message. The messenger is not more important than the message. I've been around too many organizations where I just think egos get in the way. Phil wants to deal with that, and God bless him for that. I just don't care about the organizations right now. So why'd you get the Bolt?
Got a ticket.
And what did I tell you to do?
Pay the ticket.
And why didn't you pay the damn ticket?
Because I feel I didn't have to pay the ticket. I wasn't doing anything wrong.
All right, so what happened was you came, you talked to me, I told you pay the ticket, blah, blah, blah. You wouldn't do it. And you stated to me, you thought your rights were wrong. We had a discussion about it, and I agreed with him. And from that point on, what do?
Kick an ass and take a name.
We did it by the numbers. We set the appointment up to chief of police, internal revenue, sergeant of affairs and all that. We went sergeant of traffic.
Sergeant of traffic.
Tell a little bit about that, Phil.
The sergeant of traffic and the sergeant of internal affairs. Now, we had a meeting with them, and we decided that we were going to talk about it in a room. So Bill and I agreed. Took 3 inches of statutes, legal briefs, judges' decisions, National Highway and Traffic and Safety Administration decisions, everything that we needed, but we were loaded for bear. I even took the motorcycle roadside checkpoints that they were going to have. The guy said, yeah, we received the grant, but they didn't know what the grant was for. The other guy looked at the traffic guy. He couldn't tell him what the grant was for until I slid the papers in front of him and told him. So they agreed. They're only going to ask for license, registration, and proof of insurance. Now, we all know before they get out of the car, or at this point, at the checkpoint, they're going to ask for it and they're going to run it. So.
That irritates the hell out of me. We know they've already run all that. They have that information.
Right.
So why do they come over and bother us? Because maybe you can't find a piece of paper right away, or maybe your registration's out of date, but you got the sticker on it. They still hassle us when they know on their computer everything is okay. That is the first of all, I check my paperwork almost monthly because I do get stopped. But I do not understand why, if it, on their computer it says we're okay, why do you got to stop and hassle us for stupid pieces of paper?
Yeah, and what they agreed to us with us before we left out of there was they were not going to hassle the motorcyclists anymore. No more discriminatory stops. No more helmet tickets. No more bullshit tickets of any kind unless they see a violation. And then they ask, well, if the guy gets out of line or mouthy or whatever, well, Bill and I, go back to Bill's favorite words, shut up.
You know, Phil and I are like fire and ice, I got to tell you. Hopefully as you get to stay with us, you get to know us. Phil is a technical person. He's got all the briefs and lawsuits and blah, blah, blah. I'm not that concerned. That's Phil's job. My concern is to tell these police officers, we need this change. This is wrong, blah, blah, blah. If they want to get technical stuff, Phil will bury them in paperwork. That's his style. My style is to cut through that and make them tell us why they're doing it. Don't tell me it's the law. Tell me why you're doing it. And I found out that works very well. But you got to have a balance. I want you to explain to me what you're doing. Phil will tell you what the law is. We have got a lot of different programs going on. And I want to tell you that I get stopped an awful lot. I won't tell a lot of my history on the air here. This is not about my lifestyle and all that. I have a active history going a long way back, and I've learned at some point in time I can't let other people fight my fights for me. I can't let other people solve my problems. I have to solve this. I'm telling everybody out there listening, you have to solve your own problems. You have to find out what's wrong in your neighborhood. We have got so many issues going on. In fact, they told me, and I don't know why they said this to me, that they weren't going to hassle the club people anymore coming into our town. We didn't even ask that. That was something they gave up. I got to tell you right away. I know you jump in, Phil. Hang on. I got to tell you why Phil is irritated. When we went in, Phil signed in, and the police station, and they said to Phil the Pentagon, and Phil stood up and went, oh, Mr. Kennedy, please come in. We went inside, and I went by sergeants, captains, whatever. Oh, Mr. Kennedy. I'm going, wow, I don't think I know these people even. Throughout the whole conversation, they kept saying everything, well, Phil. Everything to me was Mr. Kennedy. At the end of the meeting, I think Phil was smoking mad. But, like I tell you people, he don't got a beard. If he had a beard, if he had long gray hair, he'd get the respect. He doesn't. I keep telling him, do so. Or you know what, at least dye your long hair gray, for God's sakes. You know what? He's a 50-year-old guy who looks like he's 40. Something's wrong with that. I'm a 60-year-old guy who looks like I'm 70. Yeah.
You know, I was a little upset, but basically, I was upset at the way they kind of tried to do it. Right from the get-go, I got the arm put on me until they mentioned Bill, said hello to Bill. Then that kind of smoothed things out for a little bit till we sat down and it was tense in that room. And about 20 minutes into it, Bill taps me on the knee and he goes, hey, Philip, are you hot? No, I'm not hot, Bill. Because Bill already knew I had the tape recorder going in my pocket. So Bill looks across the table. The guy's wearing a winter coat, guys. A winter coat. The door's closed. There's no air on, nothing.
No windows.
No windows.
Nothing. We're locked up in the interrogation room.
And Bill says to the guy, hey, are you hot? You want to take off your jacket? No, I'm okay. Because he was wearing a tape recorder and didn't want us to see it. But when we went in there, and I know beforehand because I've been dealing with him for the last 3 weeks, they already knew our backgrounds. They already knew where we were. They already knew what computer we're on. They already knew what affiliations we had, everything like that. So basically, by the time we left that room, they respected us. And I think we did it the right way. And I have to thank all the guys in Bolt, the Helmet Law Defense League. I won't say the cast of characters, but I'll say all the guys that sent me the information, walked me through the process, showed me what to do, how to fill it out, how to do it right. Because apparently, even though I'm a new guy on the computer for about the last 7 months, sometimes, yeah, I have trouble with punctuation. Sometimes I have trouble where to put the comma or how to dot the T or dot the I and cross the T. But don't condemn me for that. Follow the message. That's all I'm saying. Follow the message.
You know, when we're in the police station there, three times they try to make a summon adversary with you. Three times that one cop kept pushing and pushing. I got to save you a lot of respect because you kept you cool. I don't know, because I got the gray hair. They just did not want to make that confrontation. But three times that one cop kept pushing you, and I know you. I know that's a hard thing for you to do is maintain with that. So I would say you did a good job on that.
And I think he was pushing me because, yeah, I have some things I've been arrested for.
Anger issues?
That slipped out. Anger issues, you know, things I've done in the heat of passion or the heat of anger. And they knew that, so they were trying to push my buttons, but I didn't give them the opportunity. Like I said, they thought I was a hard-ass coming in, and when I left, I was still a hard-ass, but they respected me.
If you play within the game, or within the rules they allow you, that's where you're most productive. We have been discussing things, and for so long, Phil and I, and all of us guys in North County, we just put up with this. We figured, as I said earlier, let the lawyers deal with it. I got a lot of respect for the lawyers. Let the lawyers deal with it. And it wasn't until Phil got the ticket, and for 6 months he was bugging me about the ticket before I said, let's do something about it. And that's when I started to realize, we can do this. And I know I'm beating the old horse, a dead horse, but I got to tell you, you can do the same thing out there, guys. You find out what's wrong. Phil and I ride around. I get pulled over 3 miles an hour over the speed limit.
By the guy who likes to write the helmet tickets.
Now, nobody gets pulled over for 3 miles an hour over the speed limit.
Hey, Bill, I got news for you. Sonny got arrested in Arizona for going 4 miles over the limit.
True.
And then got charged with obstruction of justice because he stood up off his motorcycle.
In my case, he just told me that we're just letting you know, Mr. Kennedy, that speeding is not acceptable here. You have to maintain the speed limit. I was doing 45. I went into a 35 zone. It goes right back into a 45. So I don't know when the split was, but 3 lousy miles an hour over the speed limit. That's the point where me and the cop said, okay, Phil's got a point. Phil should have to deal with that. I should have to deal with a lousy 3 mile an hour speed limit. Will they get me for the other time? Oh, my helmet. My pipes are loud and all that.
Right.
That's Mark Snick's little stuff. To waste taxpayers' time because Bill Kennedy's doing 3 miles an hour, that's wrong. And the only way we can do it is we got to tell them, if you keep doing this, we're going to keep confronting you. You're going to tell your superiors why you're doing this. We were amazed at the response the police did because we're confronting them hard on saying, tell us why you're doing this.
Plus the fact that when I talked to the chief, the underlings were keeping it from him. He didn't know anything until I was there. And then it was more like, get that guy in here, find out what's going on, and make it go away. And that's what happened. That's what we did.
I'd like to explain to the police that this is a stop they can make or don't make. They don't have to make a discretionary stop. And they said, well, it's the law, Mr. Kennedy. And I said, no, it's the law, but how many bicycles do you see running through stop signs, failure to stop at all, they crowd into my lane? Have you ever written a bicycle ticket? Ever? Well, no. You had the choice to do it. You don't. And yet you write me up for 3 miles. You stopped me for 3 miles an hour. I said, if you're going to pull the bicycles over every time they go through red light and all that, that's fine. But you're not. We have out in California law says children under a certain age must wear a helmet. I said, have you ever given a child a ticket for not wearing a helmet? Well, no. Yet you want to stop us. When you stop us, you send a message out to the community. Don't come to Oceanside. Don't go to our restaurants. Don't go to my motorcycle shop. Don't go to the gas station. Take your money, spend it somewhere else. I'm a businessman, I told them. You are supposed to be making our business grow. And again, as Phil was saying, that by presenting ourselves logical and not responding to their threat, and it was a threat. They tried to push Phil 3 times into an argument, and we stayed our ground, no muss, no fuss. And now, I don't want to say it's a better world, but at least for us in Oceanside, it's a better world, guys.
That's true. As of this, like I said, I went out the other day. I pulled the light turned green. I went up on one wheel, no helmet on, and the guy was making a right turn. And when he seen me go up in the air, he just turned his head and drove straight away. I can't get a ticket now.
Yeah, Phil and I have a different opinion on wheelies. Some of my wheelies are amazing, like about 2 feet off the ground. I can't get up any higher. I don't know if it's no huevos or I fall down too much. I don't know, but To me, I think I pop a wheelie. I don't do a wheelie.
Well, I don't know, Bill. There's nothing like the feeling of a V-twin running between your testicles.
Well, I'm just thinking about the terminology, semantics you used on that. I understand the concept, but someone thinking of it running over me or something like that, squishing my testicles, I don't know. You know, I want to talk a little bit about United States Department of Defense engages Motorcycle Safety Foundation to conduct focus groups. And, Phil, talk a little bit about that, and then I'll jump in with you. Oh, listen, before we start doing this, and you guys out there listening to us, if you think Bill is taking too much of the show and he's slighting Phil, jump in, type us something like that, because it's supposed to even show. I just know I have a bad habit of talking a bit too much, so we want to give Phil even times, punch it in and say, Bill, shut up, give Phil some time. We want to work on that. Does anybody care? Okay. Who's this and what knows how we call Margaret Thatcher? I don't know if I'm going to England or not, but...
That's Jen. We got, you talk about it. We got something in the chat that somebody's talking in about talking to Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah. I'm saying we don't need her right now, but
no.
Yeah. Who's
no.
that, Jen?
That's Jen.
Jan, are you out there? Thank you.
And then, you know, like, Bill, you know, the Department of Defense is, they're gonna start a program with all the bases. And, the Department of Defense has engaged the Motorcycle Safety Foundation to conduct focus groups for the Defense Safety Oversight Control Council. The focus groups will take place at different locations across the United States in close proximity to military installations. What Pendleton is going to do there is right by the front gate where they have the training for the motorcycles at the Staff NCO Club. It's about 300 feet, make a right turn, go up a little hill, and there's the Staff NCO Club. And there's a big trailer off to the right, and they have all the markings painted in the parking lot for the motorcycles. So they're basically what they're doing is the guys can't get the bike until they talk to their CO. They have to go through the chain of command, and then the next thing you know, they got their license and they're out there, and they're looking for that adrenaline rush coming back from Iraq or again Afghanistan, and basically a 160 horsepower pocket rocket is it.
Phil and I live in a neighborhood, an area that has the highest amount of accidents and deaths anywhere in California. So the police are saying, well, if you have legal DOT helmets, you won't have the accidents. We had to prove to them most of the accidents are caused by these young military kids who have DOT helmets. Unfortunately, they're on a vehicle that has so much torque, so much power, they don't have the ability to maintain and control it. That's where we're getting these deaths. And we were to convince them that helmet, legal, non-DOT, which we can't describe anyway, we don't have a clue what it is,
It doesn't exist
at all. And these accidents, these deaths we're talking about, these are young military guys, again, with full DOT helmets. They got those safety vests on and all that. They don't have the abilities. I'm at a point where I'd like all these Yamaha, Kawasaki, Suzuki, every of these metric motorcycles and English motorcycle, at some point these dealers, they have to step up to the plate and say, we have a responsibility that we need to help these kids before we put them on a motorcycle.
And actually, Bill, they don't do that. They know they're coming back with 10, 20 grand in their pocket. They're looking for the dollar first, make the sale, and then talk to them after the sale. And that's not wrong.
Wrong to make a buck, but you at least have a moral obligation to help these people out here. You can't put them on these rockets here. How many times have you seen me in my shop when I was uncomfortable selling a guy a motorcycle? I spent an hour and a half, him and I working on the motorcycle, driving the motorcycle, going, refreshing his skills before I let him go. They don't do that at these dealerships. They just give them the motorcycle, off they go. And, of course, the young man's ego says, I don't need any help. I'm good to go. He doesn't have the abilities. I think all of these dealerships across the nation have got to step up to the plate and say, we owe these young people, these young men and women, we owe them more training. We owe them more responsibilities. We need to look at their mothers and fathers and say, we're doing the best we can for your kid, not giving them some rocket and they're going to crash and burn after spending that time overseas, surviving all that overseas bullshit, coming back here, motorcycle accident, or even a high-performance car. Let's not just pick the cars, motorcycles, cars, trucks. You can't put somebody in a high-performance vehicle if they don't have the skills. I see somebody's been writing facts or contacting me. They want me to make more fun of Phil. I don't mean to make fun of Phil. Phil and I, it's the way we are. Sometimes he said things that are odd to me. If you could see us right now, Phil's side of the desk, he has 200 pages. My side of the desk, I have 4 pages. That's the way Phil is. That's the way I like the guy. He's just got stuff on stuff on stuff, and yet I got 4 pages. Doesn't mean he's better than I am. Doesn't mean I'm better than he is, but you got to understand us. It's the way we are. We encourage anybody to talk to us. We will never shut anybody down. We will give you a chance to speak. I assure you, if I disagree with you, we will tell you flat out, that's absolutely nothing we accept. But our program is to allow everybody to speak. I think I said something before, the saying by Benjamin Franklin, your rights stop where the tip of my nose starts. Think about that for a second, guys. Your rights stop where the tip of my nose starts. You have a right to do what you want. You lean on me, you push me, you try to force any of your ideology on me, it's not going to happen. Sometimes I get a little more vocal. It's the way I feel about it. This is the first time I've had a show where I don't have sponsors. I've had radio shows. I've had cable shows. I'm always a slave to my sponsors. Some of you may have heard that I lost my radio show recently because I was bad-mouthing Communist China. Well, it's the way it is. One of my sponsors was a large airplane manufacturer, and they shipped to China, and they asked me to back off. I don't want to back off. One of the basic tenets of communism is to control the abolishment of all religion. I'm not getting on a religious thing here. I'm just trying to tell you, we got to see what the future is. Getting in bed with China is stupid. Do I have a problem with Russia? No, they've gone democratic. Do I have a problem with communism? Wake up, America. There are no motorcycle clubs in China. There are no outlaw clubs in China. There is nothing. They would never allow it. This is why democracy is the best. I would never badmouth any Chinese or anybody else, but if it's a communist country, wherever they are, this is not on my list of acceptable people. And unfortunately, I go off on that too much. So, Phil, get me out of there. Jump in something for, okay?
Yeah, it's like I was talking about, Bill, about this, you know, the Department of Defense has a bunch of ongoing efforts to make motorcycle riding safer for the guys, but sometimes you just don't see it. I mean, there's guys out there that, and right now this base is at half strength. Usually it's about 60,000 plus. Right now half of those guys are gone, and another 3,000 or 4,000 are going to leave in a couple of weeks. Destination unknown, but we all know. So when they come back, like I said, they have all this money. They're doing this. Some of them are on their third or fourth tour, and the only outlet they have is just like us, feel free in the wind, riding our bikes. So I don't blame them for that. But what I do get upset about is when I'm tooling down the freeway at 80 and six of them go by me on one wheel at 100-plus miles an hour doing wheelies and shit. And then the next thing you know, another half a mile down, I'm pulling over to help one or two of them who decided they needed to fall down and roll 300 feet and get all kinds of raspberries all over the place.
And, Philip, what is wrong with these people? Doesn't anybody has a sport bike have any type of tools? I've stopped to help people. They don't carry any tools. Now, I have a brand-new motorcycle. I have a tool bag because I never know what's going to happen. I don't know where I'm going to be at. I may have to tear up a fence or something. I don't know what I'm going to need. What is wrong with the sport bike community? Carry some tools, guys. Make it easy on yourself. Simple anything. But we have never yet seen anybody with any tools all the time we stop to help them.
Never, never. And the other thing is, you know, I've seen two accidents in the last 10 years since I've been here. And one of them up on going into Pogus Gate, it's a farther out gate, but it's off of I-5 where the landing area is by the hovercraft. And you go underneath the freeway and you come back out, and sometimes there's a metal, well, actually a wire with a little sign on it that you can't see until you get about 10 feet from it. Well, the guy decided, because on that side of the freeway, a lot of guys park their bikes over there, because there's a guard and a booth there. And nobody's going to steal anything when a guy's got a loaded M16. So one night, the guy's sitting in the booth, and a bike goes by. No body on it. The body's 30 feet in front of the cable.
and they sent 300 guys out to try and find this guy's head that rolled all the way to the top of the cliff.
You're stuttering again. Why are you stuttering again?
I know.
You don't stutter normal during the daytime.
I know.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And
it's a great story.
It's a 100-foot drop, and that's where the guy's head ended up inside that helmet from hitting that cable. They estimated that when he got off the freeway, he slowed down. He went under the freeway. It's about 400 feet. By the time he hit that cable, they estimated he was doing 75 miles an hour and didn't know that the cable was there. Took his head right off at the neck, wearing a full-face helmet.
You know, I have no idea why that, well, I guess sport bikes don't break down. But the occasion that we've stopped to help these people, I don't know why they don't have a basic program in motorcycle maintenance. A lot of times we help people out, and the problem is so minuscule. Take off your seat. Let me check your battery post. Look at right here. Have you checked your battery? Well, no, I didn't. It's kind of a new bike and blah, 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 blah. You need to know some basic maintenance. Now, when people want to work for me as a mechanic, I have one question. Can you fix anything I can break? And if they say, yes, I can, Mr. Kennedy, they're hired because I break a lot of weird stuff. But I talk to people. I have the basic knowledge on. Before I leave, I have my pre-flight inspection, and when I come back, I have my post-flight inspection. I check my tires. I check my battery. I check my cables. I just give it a 10, 15-minute go over my bike before I leave. When we do the big bike runs from my shop, I have my mechanics go out, and we will pull people out of the line. Because my mechanics will say, you're 10 pounds of pressure low. You're 15 pounds of pressure low. Well, I didn't know. We bring them in the back. We put air in them. You need to be aware it's your vehicle. It's your responsibility. I know a lot of bar bikers just go from their house to the bar and back, and they don't go long enough to care. If you travel with us, know some basic maintenance on your motorcycle. Again, I'm not pushing anybody to go to MMI. I'm not encouraging anybody to go there, but take your manual. Read one page of your manual a day. Take it in the bathroom with you. Read one page a day. Know where your things are when they break. It's pretty simple. Phil, you and I have the same type motorcycle, so if one of us acts up, we can pretty much take care of our problems together.
Correct.
But I feel some guys have some funky shovels and stuff with that, and we're quite used to saying, all right, we made it so far, we'll do a Band-Aid repair, we'll get them home again. But the new bike riders, and this is even the new Harley riders, they don't have a clue
on
how
what
to fix
do.
Anything.
On what to do. I had a guy the other day, when I got gas, he was on a street bob and asked me where to put the oil in. And I just looked at him. I couldn't believe it because I know when he bought the bike, they went over it and showed him what was what and where who was what.
Who told him that? How do you know that?
Well,
dealership or what?
Yeah, the dealership. I know the dealership will send somebody out there and show you the bike.
I didn't know that.
Well, New York.
I'm not saying you didn't tell me a story. I'm just
no,
saying
no.
I didn't know that.
New York Mike does it.
You don't have to say names. I didn't say anything.
I'm not calling you a fibber. You got a free plug. But it's just like we're talking about, Bill. I don't know if what was it last summer we were standing in the doorway and a guy came by on the crotch rack with the two of them and tried to do that one wheel stop with the front end.
Yeah, stop it, yeah.
And then he wound up on his ass. We all just clapped and laughed.
I got to tell you, I've seen, of course, we had a bunch of the sport bike riders at my shop last month. They were doing all kind of demonstrations about a month ago. They were doing all kind of demonstrations beyond anything that my Harley could ever possibly think of. What I want to share with, this is the most bizarre stunt I've ever seen in my life. Billy and I were going down to Ensenada, Mexico. We were on the Cueto, is that correctly? Phil's much better Spanish
yes.
than I am. I butcher language, so if anybody speaks Spanish, I apologize. We're going down the Cueto, and a guy comes by me in a sport bike. He is standing next to the motorcycle, and we're doing about 55, 60. Mexico's kind of funny about speeding down there because the laws are not that good. 55, 60 miles an hour. He's got both feet on the ground, left hand on the block, right hand on the throttle. And he pulls right up to me, and he's talking to me. Both feet on the ground.
On the ground, leaning on the bike.
And I'm thinking, what? I've seen a lot of stunts. That was beyond bizarre. And I said, you going down to Ensenada? He goes, yeah. I said, well, I'll see you down there. I'll buy you a drink. And then he jumped on the bike, and he took off so quickly, I'd look down, see if my bike was still running, but I have never seen anything like that. Both feet on the ground next to the motorcycle. Unbelievable. Unbelievable stupidity to me, but I got to appreciate that. I've never seen anything like that ever.
You know, it's just like these going back to the checkpoints, Bill. That's basically when we left that room with the police department, that's basically what they're going to be looking for. Because a lot of those guys have the bikes, but they don't have the license because they can't pass the test on base.
Registration insurance is always a pain in the butt. You know, there are companies. You got to find the independent agents and the insurance people. Let them do research. Find the best deal for you. We have a list of people. I'm not going to give them free plugs tonight. When guys say, look, I can't get insurance. I've got DUIs. I got this. I got that. We'll help you get insurance. But I'm going to tell you right now, because of your stupidity, you're going to pay through the nose. I'm not a minister. I'm not your mama. I'm not going to tell you to drink and not drink. I'm saying use your head. You want to stop somewhere and have a drink? That's your prerogative. Excuse me. If you're going to have several drinks, go home. It doesn't take a genius. A DUI today costs too much money, and it ruins everything, for God's sake. It ruins your whole weekend, I tell you that much anyway. I mean, not personally, I know that, but I heard that somewhere, I guess.
You know, there are a few things, Bill. You know, it's like when you get stopped in one of those situations. One, you already gave them probable cause because they probably followed you right out of the bar, because we all know, we've seen it. They park right across the street here in our town at the two watering holes that everybody frequents, and they watch. They time it. I've seen them. They time it, and then they'll sit there, and as soon as three or four guys come out, they don't even make it a half a block, and they're out there. And by the time we leave, because I don't drink and Bill doesn't drink.
Phil, let me tell them about a technique that we use here. Again, for Phil's reasons, I have about the smallest amount of martial art training in the world. But on the other side of it, the mental training, I don't take drugs or alcohol. I don't smoke cigarettes. I don't drink coffee. I try not to swear. I really try to make my mind responsible for everything. When I leave the bar, I stand out in the parking lot and they go, Bill, the cop's over there. I start talking extremely loud, and I can talk loud, guys. I start grabbing the people, hugging, all that. I start my bike up, and I rev it up, and I rev it up, and I take off. And boom, what's going to happen? The cop gets me two or three blocks down the road. That's the sign for any of our drunks in the bar. Get on your bike and go the other way. They pull me over. They go, well, we thought you were drinking. I go, no, I don't drink. And then they realize, oh, here we go again. I'm not saying it's the best technique in the world, but, you know, it's helped a few of my friends not to. And also, I got to say this. When Phil and I, about three or four of our partners, go into a bar, the volume goes down. People that are drunk do not want to be drunk in front of sober people. So they try to bring the volume down, try to act more sober. Phil and I never pay for drinks anywhere we go. It's always comp to us because the barmaids, the bouncers are happy to see us. We bring everybody down. I don't ever preach anything about nothing. I absolutely don't. But I tell people, they come up to me, they go, Bill, do you think I drink too much? And I say, all I know is if you have to ask me the question, you already know the answer.
Correct.
So again, I don't belong to any AA, NA, nothing. It's just my own personal choice. But again, at any point in time, you got to turn around and say, do you think I'm drinking too much? Yeah.
Same thing, Bill, along that lines where a couple of people have walked up to us and handed us the keys and taken a cab home because they know we take care of their bike for them. And we don't see that too often, but every once in a while we get it.
We got a good couple of local bars that we can stick the bikes inside and lock them up and they'll take care of it. It's a courtesy, and again, I do not encourage people to drink and drive. You don't drink and drive with Phil, and I tell you right now. You want to get down to the bar where we're going to go, check into the hotel. I don't care if you're buck naked, running down the road, shit-faced drunk. God bless you for that. That's your right. If the bike is parked. At my age, I have more brothers, people I call brothers, in the cemetery than I have brothers on the outside. I have more acquaintances than probably any person I know in my life, but they're not brothers. The brothers I have are all dead, and they're mostly because of failure to yield because of drugs and alcohol problem. I go to so many lousy funerals. I was at the funeral just after Christmas.
Just after Christmas?
Does this come to an end? I I don't understand that, and I'm going to get off that subject because, again, I do sound like I'm preaching. I'm sorry for that. I don't. Everybody make their own choices. Get back to some positive, Phil, because I'm drifting out here.
You know, it's going back to the motorcycle checkpoints, though. You know,
there you go.
It's violations, you know, they shouldn't be allowed unless there's, like, you know, we're being invaded, you know. And same thing, you know, like back in the late 1700s, early 1800s.
I'm not that old.
I'm not that old either.
You like it.
Okay, thank you. But when the Redcoats used to have the roadblocks, you know, they would violate people's Fourth Amendment rights. And then the same thing when it's the 14th Amendment, it was written after the Civil War, but the intent, you know, to me, the intent of the Fourth Amendment is clear. So I try and follow that when I get pulled over. It depends on, like you say, shut up, but it depends sometimes. Sometimes I can't shut up. I've been working on that, and you see my composure go down, and it's just that, you know, I'm not going to tolerate it anymore. I mean, after living in this area, in Southern California, for 25 years, and 18 years now that we've had no helmet law. I mean, we have a helmet law, as you could say, because there is no such thing as a DOT-approved helmet. That these guys just decided, one guy in town just decided he was going to screw with people's Fourth and 14th Amendment rights. And going back to the first IA complaint I signed against the guy, and when I went in and talked to this guy, he had already known about me. He had already known I was probably going to lose my cool, and I didn't. And I know he was prodding me.
Three times he tried to start.
Well, before that time we were together, but before that I seen him three times. And he was trying to prod me into getting in an argument. And the last time, before I got upset, I just said, hey, maybe I need to come back another day where we're both calm and collected and talk about this because it's wrong. And you know it's wrong, and I know it's wrong. But at that point, I didn't have all the information that I needed to convince them that they were wrong. And that's what we did. We convinced them they were wrong. That's why with the checkpoints now and just driving around town, great, I can't get a ticket. I'm trying. But the other guys, we have one guy that got eight tickets in the last 3 months. And Bill and I have been talking to this guy.
He's a Yahoo.
He won't listen. He's riding an old bike with no...
No front fender, no rear fender. He has no mirror. He has no turn signal. He has no horn. These are all required by the state of California. I said, please go to my back room. Put a mirror on your bike, a left-hand mirror, so all's required. Put a horn on the bike. Take some of my old turn signals, just run the wiring into the frame. No one's going to know. If you don't have turn signals, if you don't have a mirror, you have probable cause to be pulled over. The boy is too stubborn. I mean, I offered to give it to him free, so now when he gets a ticket, I say, then you accept the ticket, because this is obviously what you want. You have to work within the system. You go too far out, and they'll nitpick you with tickets to the point where you're just, you can't get to work. You can't do anything. It's just not fun anymore. But he's a young man, and young men's got to make their own choices, you know.
Right. And like I'm saying, if anybody in here, not to throw a plug out there, but if you go on the blog page, or you go on it's the blog page, and you click on Kennedy's Custom Cycles, you will see the shop. You will see inside the shop. You will see, well, we didn't take a picture of that, but we will, and I'll put it up there. But Bill has a back room. It's about 50 by 100, what, 100 feet, something like that?
Just a big thing.
Just a big room. Shelves full of old parts. Anything to do with a Harley is back there. Anything you need is back there. Bill was giving this guy the mirrors, the turn signals. He was giving him everything. The guy would not listen. Right now, I'm trying to work with him. I'm trying to get him to give me the copy.
He's a good guy.
He's a good guy.
He's just young, and he's
just dense. He's dense. He's not seeing the whole picture. So when he gets pulled over, Bill and I, the other day he came in and said he got three more tickets going to the courthouse from a highway patrolman going to court. He pulled him over and gave him three more tickets. So Bill and I said to him again, hey, go in the back room. Just run the wires. As long as they see them, they're not going to bother you. Just run the wires. The only time you have to worry about it is when
you get a vehicle inspection.
You get a vehicle inspection
test.
Rare.
That's rare.
Very rare. But because this guy's hanging himself, that's what they're doing.
You know, my parts, I got to explain a little bit about that if I can. I keep all these parts, and I don't take them to swap meets. It's not that I'm rich or anything. I just keep those parts because sometimes people just need a part. You dropped your motorcycle, in the driveway, you broke the mirror, you've bent the handlebars real bad. Maybe the wife has the only car. She's got to take the kid to school. She's got to go to work. That motorcycle is your only livelihood. I won't give something away for free because I learned over the years men or maybe bikers, ego won't allow them to take something for nothing. So I tell them they can come back. First of all, they can have a pennies on a dollar. I'll sell it to them. If they feel good, if they can have it. But you and I have all been at a time in our lives when, you know, payday was 2 days away, and I didn't have 10 bucks in my pocket. But, you know, I come from a poor family. I'm proud of that. Built myself up. So I tell these people, take the parts today, get your ticket signed off, and I ask them what their next day is. And I say, come in, clean up my parts room, straighten my parts room up for an hour or two. That way the debt is canceled. I think that giving stuff away, just sometimes people just don't appreciate it. But if they work for it, or if they pay me pennies on a dollar, they can walk out of saying, hey, I don't know, Bill, nothing.
There's some people writing me, sending me emails telling me they don't know how to get into the chat.
Oh, we got some technical problems here, ladies and gentlemen, here. While I'm talking about this, you'll understand this, that hey, stick with us, folks.
From New York, and I don't know the
Phil and I are two different personalities, like I said. We're fire and ice. Phil holds everything in. He has paperwork. He has briefs. He has all this stuff with that. And then he goes out crazy. The first sign of irritation,
no, I don't have a number.
I deal with it. Identify the problem, come up with a solution, implement, and I move on to the next one. So if you guys hang with us and you get to talk to us, we meet us at different runs, I'm everywhere like that, you'll say, wow, in real person, they're just like the same way on the radio. We're not trying to press on anybody. This is who I am.
Okay.
This is who Phil is.
Okay.
We're not movie stars. We're not pretty boys. We're just two bikers that said, enough is enough. It took Phil's ticket to get me off my butt. You know, I'm 60 years old. I got police bothering me the whole time. I just never cared.
Mm-hmm.
I paid the ticket off. You know what? I got lawyers, whatever I got to do. I got one very smart partner I ride with in San Diego. That's Indian. And Indian taught me a long time ago, Bill, you just ask for postponement. And then when you get the ticket so stretched out, then you go into court. And if you lose, no big deal. Because the other tickets you get, postponement. And I decided, I don't want to live like that anymore. If it's wrong, I want these people to stop doing me wrong. When they pull us over, we have 30 to 45 seconds to decide who's in charge of the situation. Is it us or them? Now, I understand they think they're supposed to be in charge because of paranoia. They don't know if I'm a serial killer or a rapist. God knows what I am. So they're paranoid. So I have to let them understand I'm a businessman. I'm a member of this community. I know my rights. We're going to go through this. If he wants to give me a ticket, I sign the ticket. But I am not going to be harassed. I am not going to be spoken to. I'm never going to be. No cop's ever going to swear at me. That's just absolutely out of reality. I'm never going to say yes, sir, or no, sir, because that means I'm kissing their butt. That's not going to happen either. I'll call them officer. They wish to call me Mr. Kennedy. We have a nice relationship. That's it. You guys out there, you got to find your own relationship. You just can't take a ticket, no matter what the ticket is. If you're obviously wrong, it's not worth fighting, all right. Some things you just say, I'm going to eat it. Maybe you're parking in the wrong zone or something. But if it's bogus, you got to stand up. If you stand up for yourself, you stand up for your neighbor. You stand up for the person down the street. Again, I don't have any idea why Phil just snapped. But he came in, and he was livid. And I'm thinking, well, why are we going to bother? But as we get into this, we realize that
actually, what happened was Bill learned something. The bottom line is I taught Bill something. After all the years of teaching me something, I was finally able to return the favor and teach Bill something. And I didn't teach him that it was screaming and hollering and fighting and punching and using my hammer or however you want to call it. But what I did was, I used the tools I was taught how to use. I've been preaching the message to the choir. Sometimes the choir listens, sometimes the choir doesn't. We all know that. So we're going to have a few in the choir that, no, I'm going to do it my way. Well, they're figuring out their way isn't working. I figure this guy's got another month or so before he goes back to court for the other three tickets that he got, and he'll call me up and see. Maybe he'll be humble this time and sit here in the house, in the kitchen, and learn something. If not, I can't. I already asked questions. Do I chase these guys down or whatever? And I was told, don't chase them. See if you can get a copy of the ticket. I've been waiting for a copy of 9 tickets I haven't seen yet.
That's a good example, going back to me again. You know, I've known this is going on for a long time, but we had lawyers doing this. We had all these political organizations, biker rights organizations. So why am I going to bother? You know, I'm one guy. And it wasn't until you came in, and I got to say this, all the people you've been speaking to, they have changed your personality a lot to where you become so much more meticulous. You still have the underlying current where you can explode. But since we got into this here, you've learned how to control and use all these tools.
Yeah, but if my English and punctuation and shit was a little better, but I'm learning, Bill.
No, we're not going to apologize to these people for that.
I'm not apologizing.
No, because we're giving a message out here. All right, then.
Exactly. I'm not apologizing, Bill. What I'm saying is don't read what I write. Listen to the message. Because I know the way I'm writing, you get the message. But if you want to make fun of the way I write things, hey, more power to you. I got broad shoulders. I can take it.
I told Phil from the beginning, we can't get into this without getting some critics. If you do nothing in this world, nobody will ever criticize you. If you do anything in this world, people are going to criticize you, especially those people which are doing nothing. So I told Phil, you're going to get zapped on it, much more so than I, because I'll be much more confrontational with anybody with that. And this is something I'm really amazed at. In 6 months and all that, plus learning and talking to all these people that give you the advice and all that,
correct,
how you turn yourself around a lot.
Correct. And it goes back to that day in the room with the other two guys, Bill. And we, you know, it might sound like we're tooting our horn, but we're really not. What we're trying to tell you is what we did, how we did it, and got the outcome that we wanted. Basically, we shook hands and got what we wanted when we left. And using the tools that these guys gave me, and I've been telling Bill this for the last 7 months, Bill, it works if we let it. Just hear me out. And a lot of times
I didn't want to bother.
He didn't want to bother. Because
I got the football game on.
Exactly.
I got anything on. Don't bother me. But your point was exactly that, just, Bill, listen to what I'm saying, because
yeah,
this is important
me.
To me.
Yeah, hear me out, and which he did, and that's
just
what happened.
Just shut him up, actually.
And that's what happened. I mean, like, you can hear us bantering now. Yes, that's sometimes how we had the conversations. But we're very good friends. And later on tonight, when we get done here, we're probably going to sit back and have a laugh before we part ways this evening. But that's the way it is, guys. We're trying to get the message out. If I have to take a little heat, maybe it's Bill's turn next week. Maybe by the end of the show, it's going to be Bill's turn. But that's the way I am. And this is the only guy that can do it to me.
I love taking the heat. Again, I don't want to go to my own past history, but I've done interventions with organizations so that organizations didn't go to war. So taking heat and making correct decisions is one of my specialties I've done for 20-some years now. Actually, I'm hoping at this point in my life now that somebody else is going to step up and try to take some of these interventions away and somebody else do it. It's a lot of aggravation on me. But it's given me a lot of understanding of the fact that whatever I say or do, I'm responsible for it. I'll stand up for it. But I was worried that Phil might be a little bit more thin-skinned because people are making fun of the way you write and all that.
Yeah, well, I'm not getting thin-skinned, Bill. It's just the fact that sometimes, you know, some guys, you know, I'm not retired. I got in a bad motorcycle accident, and I've been off for the last 7 months. So that's when I sat down. Instead of watching TV or soap operas, I sat in front of the computer, and I've been teaching myself the computer. And the people that I've been dealing with, some people see I'm getting better, and some people think I'm not getting better. So I really don't care what they think. I have to listen. When they send me something, I listen. I read their stuff, and I get their message. And sometimes, yeah, we all type different. I know I should be able to type and look at the screen at what I'm writing, but sometimes I have to chicken peck. Well, you know, that's the way it is.
Tell me about your injuries. What did you go down last time?
I got hit on the freeway at 55 miles an hour by a guy in a brand-new bagger who decided he wanted to leave after I came to. And I ended up, I broke 8 ribs in my back, put 2 of them to the back of my lung, and I had broken my shoulder. So I got 3 plates and 48 screws in my shoulder now, Bill.
Will your shoulder will eventually repair?
I hope so. I'll find out next week. I'll go back to the doctor to see.
What about those scars all over your face? Will that get better?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought those scars were permanent.
No, they all had character, Bill. You know that. We're a couple of characters.
You know, I want to say this. I was hoping to get more irritable on that one. 55 miles an hour doesn't seem like much. It sounds like Phil's a very careful driver, actually. California Freeway is 55. Phil, tell us where you were driving when you were doing 55.
I was in a white line. Actually, I was doing 80, Bill, and I seen the top of a helmet, some of the cars up, and I just thought in the back of my mind, I hope this guy doesn't pull out next to me, and he did. He clipped me.
You know, you people back east, the Midwest, and wherever you can hear us, if you don't have to split traffic, you have a blessing. I have to split traffic every single day of my life. I no longer run a bagger because a bagger just is, it takes too much space. I have a street bob, as skinny as I can get it, so I can just roll right through traffic. If you live in a state...
Actually, Bill, tell them when you roll through traffic, who's driving the front, who's leading the pack, and who's trying to catch up to me?
I don't know, Phil. Must be one of your friends I don't know about. Yeah. You drive like an old woman.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, I'm off a bit. How rude him to keep interrupting me. I know. Having a bagger out here is, I've never liked it at all. I do want to tell you, though, short story. I was over in, I think it was Nebraska. And I was on the freeway. I just came out of a truck stop. The freeway was empty. There was no traffic in front of me, no traffic on the other side. I wanted to pull off because I was scared. If I got traffic all around me, okay. This is California. I'm happy. I can feel all the traffic. I get out on an empty freeway. I didn't know what to do. It was a weird feeling going down the road. But you people that have that, you're awful lucky. California, we have the weather. We have some great parties. If you don't like splitting traffic, and we have to do it every day, it's just terrible. I have friends out here visiting all the time. They say, how can you live like this? I'm going, well, you don't have to live. It's where our lifestyle is, and that splitting traffic eclipses a lot of us, an awful lot of us.
That's true, Bill.
That's why I don't want to. I took the roll bars off my bagger. The fairing was too wide. I need as many inches as I can. I need that bike streamlined. That's the only way we live out here in California. We flip-flop, we zigzag, but for me to live in a place with wide open roads again, I would think that'd be a blessing.
And my bike, Bill, which is up on the website, it's so streamlined, the only thing I got room to carry is a hammer.
I try to measure my levers, clutch lever, brake lever, and I need to know there is nothing wider than those levers. It's too strange. We had a Greyhound bus pull over into my lane. There was a traffic. I was going through split traffic. He didn't see me. I don't blame the guy. He hit me, not hard. But he made my brake lever compress. I'm trying to go down the freeway. This Greyhound bus is putting pressure on my brake lever. He's squeezing me in, trying to make me stop. I'm trying to go. This is the crap we got to deal with every day. So you guys out there that complain about the weather, the rain, the snow, you don't have to deal with this crap, and it is crap out here, guys.
You know, Bill, we're gonna take a short break, and what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna play a song. We'll be back in a couple of minutes, guys.
I could sing for a little bit.
Nah, that's okay, Bill. We already had your rendition of Happy Trails last week.
I liked Happy Trails.
So what I'm going to do, guys, is I'm going to play a song for a minute, and we'll be right back.
walking out anyway. And that's a cold shot, baby. Yeah, that's a day.
Guys, we're back.
Hour two of the Phil and Bill show.
Little technical difficulty there, but I think we've got it handled now. I was just looking in the chat when I came back. If you guys would type your questions, we'll answer them. Now, for somebody that typed in what do we mean by traffic splitting lanes, that's going between the cars. That's the day that happened to me, which I ride that way for the last 17 years, and usually I get off work 3:30, and by that time it's a parking lot. Traffic's moving 10 to 15 miles an hour for at least 25 miles. So being that my bike is slim and ready to go, I split the lanes, which
air
means
cooled. Air cooled,
which means I'm going between the cars. Usually, they hear me coming. So it's like the Red Sea parts. About anywhere from 5 to 6 cars ahead of me, they start to move over and let me through. At that point, I either have a CHP on a bike, a sheriff on a bike, even an Oceanside policeman I had one time on a bike behind me, splitting lanes at 55 to 60 miles an hour. Or I get behind them when they're going 75 to 80 miles an hour. But yes, out here it's legal to split lanes in California, speed permitting. But when you're behind a law enforcement guy, carte blanche, he can't pull you over going for faster than he is because he has no lights on. He has no destination but home. So when they're doing their thing, I join right with them. They all know me by name. That's why that pissed me off, because I got a ticket after 18 years. I see the same guys every day. They know me by, you know. If I was working nights and come home at 2:30 in the morning, they sit up on top of the viaduct looking. I've had them pull me over in the beginning and tell me I heard you coming because of the canyons.
Sure, you're a lot exhausted. You're in a Thunderheader, right?
Yeah, I'm running Thunderheader, but, you know, by the way it goes, who knows, you know?
Let me explain again, this split in traffic. We're not doing this because we're, you know, trying to be cool or get kicks. When Phil and I leave Ensenada, or let's see, we leave Tijuana, we'll come back to America. The wait crossing the border is an hour to half, an hour to 45 minutes. Phil and I get from downtown Tijuana across the border into America in 15 minutes. If we would sit and wait and go at the normal flow of traffic, our bikes would overheat and I'd get bored anyway. It's simply on the California freeways, there's too many of us out here. You cannot stay on the freeways and go at slow speeds. If there's an accident on the freeway, the cars, the trucks, the semis, they're done. That traffic is stopped. We motorcycles, either we learn to split traffic or just get off the freeway. And I tell people, if you're not comfortable, first of all, don't do it, because you will go down. You're going to get hit. You're going to get clipped. I've not gone down on the freeway because of splitting, but I've been hit 2, 3, maybe 4 times by vehicles. Nothing big, you know, bang, 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 bang. That's life in California. But the purpose of it, again, is from Tijuana to the border, 15 minutes on the motorcycle, the same distance in a car could be an hour and a half to hour 45 minutes. I hope that explains a little bit to you.
You know, it's just like this, Bill. You know, we've been doing this for years, and a lot of times when we go on a run, I'm the guy splitting the car so everybody else behind me can go through.
You're expendable.
That's true.
Cannon fodder.
That's true. So it's just like, you know, things are happening this way and things are happening that way. So basically, when I went down that day, I was riding my bike like a jet ski till I hit the bot dot and everything flipped.
And you were by yourself.
And I was by myself.
The original reason we always keep Philly out front is the fact that, you know, I ran baggers for several years because we went through that bagger craze a while back. We need Phil to go through. As he goes through, I have a little more space because now they're looking for motorcycles. If I try to bring my bagger through, hey, it's just a pain in the butt. They're not aware of it. But if Phil goes through, they give him a little tiny room, then I have a little more room. Now we're both on the same type of bike, and now it's just straight on. But we have got so many of our friends that have all been gone down on the freeway. It's not a matter of if we are all going to go down on the freeway. There's no getting around it. But that's life. That's the way it has to be. Or stop riding your motorcycle.
That's true. I mean, I've done it. I've done it at 120 plus with 10 guys 3 feet apart. And you might say we're crazy, but that's the way I ride.
I got hit on my head by my partner's ape hangers. We're going down the road, and I saw somebody pull out, so I backed off the throttle. He's so close to me, he smacked me in the head with his handlebars, ape hangers. I say this because it's humorous. This is actually the way we live out here. It doesn't mean we're trying to prove we're tough guys. We're not. You don't split traffic in California, you're never going to get home. Ever, ever, ever. Now, I know you can't do that in Arizona because when I came back from Puerto Penasco, run down mainland Mexico, Rocky Point, if you don't speak the Espanol, I split traffic about 10 miles to get to the Arizona border. I had a giant archway. Welcome to Arizona. I'm 30 feet from Arizona, the border, the big archway. The cop comes out and starts yelling at me, "Where do you think you're going?" And I said, "Well, I think I'm going to the archway. If that's America, that's the way I'm going." "No, look at the way you're driving. That's irresponsible and all that." And I go, "Well, it's not irresponsible. It's legal in Mexico. I'm in Mexico. Soon, I'll be in America." He said, "Well, we have sovereignty 30 feet beyond this, so you technically broke the law in Arizona, blah, 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 blah." I'm sitting here thinking, what an idiot do I have here? I said, "Well, do you think I should turn around and go back the wrong way and, go way, way, way in the back?" "Well, what do you think is fair?" "What I think is fair is when I'm in Mexico, I need to obey the Mexican laws. If you think for 6 feet I've been in Arizona soil, I have ruined, broken a law, I will let one car go ahead of me. That'll make everybody even, Steve, and I'll be on my way." And he said, "I could put you in jail and blah, 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 blah." But he didn't. That's all just talk. First of all, any policeman out there, don't make a threat unless you're going to do it. It makes you look weak. Okay, so I go back to Arizona, and he said, "You cannot do that." So you got to know the different laws, because what's legal for us in California and Mexico, I didn't know you couldn't do that in Arizona.
You know, that's just like, Bill, when a lot of times when they pulled us over before, a lot of times they would put the arm on us, or try to, for money. Because 20 bucks will go a long way down there. The last time I was down there, I got pulled over by two guys in uniform, no guns, no radio. Guy carrying a bag of toilet paper on his back. Told me if I didn't give him $400, they were going to take my bike. As I was reaching for my hammer, the next thing I know, "Well, just give us 20 bucks and we'll let you go." As I reached for my hammer again, I got on my bike and drove away. I'm not going to pay anybody to drive on the road. Period.
I got to tell you, I got 40 years of riding in Mexico. I've never got a ticket. I've never got pulled over. I'm lucky, I guess. I come to these checkpoints, and I ride the side of the road. I ride the sidewalk. I go right up, and they wave me on by. I believe Mexico is a special place. Now, if you're going to do something illegal in America, and you get pulled over, you're going to get a ticket, and you're going to go to court. You're going to go do this. You're going to do that. Time spent, money spent. In Mexico, if you have blatantly broken the law and 40 bucks gets you out the door, I tell people, pay the 40 bucks. When we go down to Ensenada for the big parties, I take one complete hotel out, and every room is in my name. We have guests in our hotel, and I ask everybody, if it's a new guy, "What's your old lady like? Is she a prude? Is she going to be concerned about this? Is she going to be okay with what the party we're going to have? If he says, you know what, she's kind of, you know, wussy, I says, a great hotel right over there. We bring everybody in our hotel. Everybody there is to party. We go down to the chief of police in Ensenada.
And that's just for you, Chuck. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you did, though.
That's a good one.
I'm writing it down. You did.
Just for you, Chuck.
You stepped on me.
Just for you, Chuck. We hang all the thongs on the drums.
Chuck, if you're out there, he's a sick puppy. So we go down to Ensenada. I go down to the chief of police, and I tell him, I'd like to have some security. Can you help me out? He said, well, I'll give you a couple off-duty cops. And I said, well, I don't know much about the price. What's a fair price? He'll give me two cops. I now have the hotel on lockdown. Nobody can come into our party. We're paying for police support. I am not going to talk anything at all about the parties going on, but I'm going to tell you it is absolutely the good part is R and the bad part is X, or any way you look at it. It is wide open in there because we're paying for what we want. So many people say, well, Mexico's corrupt. Well, let me ask you what corruption is. If you want to do something and you want to pay for it, then who am I to judge you? You want to do something in America, and you do get a ticket, look at the process it takes to get that off your back. In Mexico, I got 40 years, they've never given me a ticket, but I've learned to work within the system in there. Phil, you remember a while back, I got that lady out of the back of the police station, the police car.
Yeah.
We were down there for Mardi Gras, people crazy and all that. This lady came up and said, Bill, close your eyes. Thought she was going to give me a kiss. She sprayed purple spray all over my long white beard. 10 seconds later, she's tearing this limb off a tree. A cop sees it, thinks she's drunk, causing trouble, puts her in the police car.
And we have a nice 8x10.
I run down, I get the manager of the hotel, because I'm paying for all the hotel. I mean, we are paying for the hotel.
Actually, 2 8x10s.
We run down to the chief of police in Ensenada, and I said, look at da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I forgot, I got this purple stuff all over my beard. The chief of police kept staring at me, and of course, I can't speak any Spanish at all. It's terrible. He finally said, okay. He picked up the phone, told the police officer, release that lady right away. Because we're doing this within the system. I want extra police protection. I want security cops out there. That means give us some latitude. If Phil and I try to have a party in California, San Diego, and I tell the cops what I want, it would never happen. My friends would get in trouble. We'd get tickets and thrown in jail. And so I tell people that Mexico is a special place. Is it crooked? Well, it is crooked, but it's their lifestyle. In America, you're innocent until proven guilty. In Mexico, you commit a crime, you are guilty until you get to court. Then you find out if you're innocent or not. So you don't take a chance in that court system. But again, Phil, you know, what's wrong with paying a few bucks if we're going to have some wild, crazy stuff?
That's true, Bill. That's true. We have, we also have you on tape.
Oh, well, among my other things in life, I made some tapes and this and that, and so never made any money on it, but, man, we got a lifetime of memories with that stuff.
Hey, Bill, I was telling Chuck a couple of days ago about the skull ceremony.
Oh, Chuck would be the candidate.
Chuck would be the guy for a skull ceremony.
Oh.
Unfortunately, folks, we can't tell you what the skull ceremony is.
Unless you participate.
Unless you participate in the last one we had, I was the skull king.
I can't. No, I'm not going to go into it all like that. It's a like a passage, like in the Navy, they cross over a certain place.
That's true.
It's kind of like that thing in there. It's a if it's your first time down with us and you survive all weekends, we have another little ceremony on Sunday. And it's called the skull ceremony. If you survive that...
Actually, Bill, tell the truth. It's called beer, nakedness, and a lot of girls.
See, I keep saying, don't tell everybody all these things. Let me just talk in circles a little bit here. I don't want anybody to think we're totally perverts.
They already know we are.
We give you a nice necklace and all that, and wherever you see another person with that necklace, you know that person's been to the skull ceremony, and you have a special connection with that person. Only for new people coming out for the first time. Again, it goes back to what we do in Mexico, I could never do in America. I love this country.
Yeah, it's just like Vegas, Bill. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Well, what happens in Ensenada or at the skull ceremony stays at the skull ceremony.
Yeah, we have a good time in Vegas, without a doubt. But, you know, you cannot compare the glitter of Vegas to the smut of Mexico.
No, you can't. You know why? Because we locked down the hotel and we can do what we want.
And we have police outside, and they're preventing anybody from coming in, and I'm asking them.
In fact, Bill, tell the truth. They take turns coming in to see what's going on,
so,
and then by the time we get 20 minutes into it, nobody's outside watching anybody coming in.
No, it's a... I encourage people that if you got the huevos, go down to Mexico. There's stuff going on down there. It's still an open land. I have broken, my heart's been broken a long time ago, ever since the devil invented the computer. And believe me, that's where the computer came from, folks. It's from the devil. There was a time when we could get tickets and cross the border into Arizona and get a new driver's license. Oh, no. We got that computer now. My whole life is dictated by this computer. They're watching me. They're doing everything. Down in Mexico, it's just kind of a, hey, you're going to cause some trouble. Look at the damage you did. Pay for the damage. Let's all shake hands and go. That's, it may be bribery. It may be anything you want to call it, but to me, it's, I want to play. I'll pay.
Hey, Bill, you're right. Absolutely. And that's why we always bring 20s with us. But right now, I'm going to bring in a caller. And she wants to address you, Bill. So I'm going to bring her in right now.
Hey, anybody out there? This is Bill.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, Jan, how are we doing?
Real good. This is Jan from North Carolina, from Bikers USA. I wanted to congratulate the two of you on your new technological interface, even though... Bill, you don't like computers.
I hate them. The devil.
And glad that you don't have to be obliging to Chinese sponsors.
You have no idea what that pressure's off my back. If they shut me down today, it's Phil and I shutting ourselves down, but nobody else is going to throw me out again. And that's something else sad about this country that I have to, well, no. These sponsors on my radio shows, they have a right to make their money where they want to. But as I say to every CEO of every American corporation doing business with communist China, I say to you, shame on you. It's your grandchildren that's going to suffer from this. It's not going to affect me. But later in life, Americans are going to say, what happened to us? What is this? And I think it's right in front of me, and I can't see people being aware of it. They go, oh, China's the way of the future. It's okay. Are you people crazy? Sorry, Jan. Go ahead.
No, that's real good. Another comment that I wanted to make is that you were talking about splitting lanes, and that's really a concept that I understand what it is because I was up in Massachusetts, and we were able to do that. And I've ridden in California, but that was decades ago. I think it was 35 years ago. But you know, it wasn't really. You were saying like you have to split lanes, and I don't understand how it's mandatory. Can't you get in the middle of the lane and won't like another motorcyclist would respect that, right? Wouldn't they?
If we have a traffic jam, and you've seen those things on TV when it's all smashed, it's all a death, a fatality, a bumper,
yeah.
Traffic slows down to 5 miles an hour, or the traffic stops on the freeway. You either stop on the freeway, get off the freeway, or say, okay, I'm going right through this traffic. What you do is you don't look at the car in front of you, in my opinion. You look two cars ahead. You don't focus on anything. You never look at the cars you're passing. If you take for 1 second and look at the car on your left or your right, you'll go right into that car. My desert racing days, my motocross days and all that stuff I did, they told me, you're coming into a bend and you see a rock, do not acknowledge that rock. Keep it in your peripheral vision. Go around that rock. If you look at the rock, bam, you're going to hit the rock. When you're driving down the road on the freeway, you cannot look at the cars in front of you or alongside. You look at two cars ahead of you, keep the cars alongside your peripheral vision, and you focus and you roll. And that's the only way you can make it. If you're unsure of yourself and you're looking for the traffic alongside you, you are going to hit somebody. It's a sad case, but you learn to develop it or stay off the freeways.
Right. Now they have, you know, there's a lot of people out on the West Coast that tell the folks out on the East Coast or wherever that we ought to go talk to our legislators and ask them about splitting the lane, you know, getting legislation passed that allows us to do this. And I know that it's great for getting through traffic, and you have to do it because or else your motor's going to overheat. You know,
correct.
And you're going to blow up your motor. Okay, so you need to be able to continue to have some airflow on your motor. But so would you recommend against trying to get split the lane allowed?
You want to address this? You want me to do it?
Well,
you jump in. I'll say
well, it all depends. It all depends, Jen. You gotta remember something. Out here. The day, when I started doing this, we have, in the summer, we have the racetrack open, and it's on my way home. So you got to figure anywhere from 40 to 45,000, 50,000 people going to the racetrack per day, okay? They start at 8 o'clock in the morning. It's bumper-to-bumper traffic from 8 a.m. till at least 9:30 at night because of the late races. So the only way you're going to be able to get home is to split the lanes. You can't go down the coast because the coast is backed up going in the back way. You can't go down any, there are no side roads unless you're riding a dirt bike. And you have to split the lanes.
Billy, I'm sorry, you deviate from the question. She wants to know, do you or do we think that it should be okay back east? How do you feel about that?
It should be. I mean, I was back in Chicago a couple years ago and I split lanes and a guy pulled me over and he asked me where I was from. I said, California. He goes, yeah, that figures. And I go, why? He goes, because we don't split lanes here.
Now,
right,
my
right.
opinion, that is...
So it's a necessity at times.
That's all it is, yes.
That's all it is.
When the traffic's rolling, like we on Interstate 5, Philly and I can ride 75 miles an hour, it's not a problem. Interstate 15, the next freeway inland, we can roll about 85, and that's good with traffic. I'm okay at those speeds. But when it gets tight traffic, you've got to do something. And if you do get that law passed or something, I'm going to tell you, are you going to lose people? The answer is yes.
Right,
I'm going to say to
exactly.
You also, you're going to lose people slipping in the bathtub. You can dig the deepest
That's
hole
right.
in the world, jump inside of it, and I swear to you, Jan, if it's your day, it's your day. I'm not
That's
trying to
right.
tell you that, you know, I think I'm invincible. I know I'm not. I also know that I can do very, very, very little to change what's written for me.
You know,
right.
I
don't believe in the plastic bubble safety theories. You know, I believe that, you know, kids should be allowed to go out and skin their knees and fall down. Because unless you're going to be falling down, you're not going to be very coordinated when you become an adult unless you go out and you climb trees, try to balance yourself along stone walls. You might not have stone walls out there, but I'm sure you know what they are.
Yeah, we have them out here.
Yeah. Another point or question that I've got for you guys.
I really think about that, the split lanes. What do you personally think about it? Are you for or against it?
Oh, I'm for, you know, allowing us to do it. But I don't like the, you know, I do see these videos of reckless, and I'm going to say sports bikers. You know, I don't like to pick on sports bikers, but I do see, you know, 120 mile per hour, you know, in between car kind of moves. You know, that's just reckless driving, and there are laws against that. But I believe that, splitting lanes is sometimes a necessity. And when something is a necessity, you should be allowed to do it. But I don't like anything that's mandatory. You know, when you say you have to split lanes, I think it's more like there's no law forcing you. Is that what you meant?
No, we meant that we say it's mandatory because Plan B is sitting there waiting in traffic. No, the police don't care about us
right.
split lanes at all. They would probably rather we didn't. But the point is, I say it's mandatory.
Right.
You cannot sit there. It's
talking about the racetrack just down the road. We got where the Padres play. We got the football team, the Chargers, where they dropped the ball on us. This is all within 30 miles. There could be 100,000 people on our lousy freeways. You have to say, I will take 3 hours to get home, or I'm going to roll. So when I say it's mandatory, your options are limited. Certainly, nobody suggests you do that at all. It's just, if you feel comfortable, that's what you should do. Or get off the freeway.
Sure. When NASCAR comes rolling into the Charlotte Motor Speedway, you know, the traffic is backed up all around the entire city. It's really pathetic. And it is something like 3 hours to just go 3 miles. You know, it's nuts. Now, you know, people in a four-wheel vehicle that cannot split lanes are all upset with you because you can do it. But what they need to realize, see, this is a public show that you're doing, what they need to realize is that you left your four-wheel vehicle at home. So you're not creating additional traffic situations. You rode your two-wheel motorcycle.
And there are people that get frustrated, and they, instead of backing off, gives a little extra, like 6 inches, they actually come closer to the center line and make it really, really tight. But we're still going right through. That's why right now my bike is so streamlined, I'm so much better off. But a lot of people appreciate what you're doing. A lot of people say, gee, I wish I had a motorcycle. But every now and then, somebody's mad. They're stuck in traffic. I understand that. That's their problem, not my problem.
Yeah, it's a road rage, kind of a frustrating environment that they're in when they're stuck in traffic. Let me ask another point, though, that's kind of related to this. We always hear about these share the lane programs or share the road programs. There are motorcycle rights organizations that want to promote share the road with motorcyclists. And I'm thinking, you know, somebody's going to read that the wrong way. And they're going to say, oh, okay, well, they're not taking up the entire lane, so I'm going to squeeze into their part of the lane. Sign tells me to do it.
That's correct, because they see us sharing the lane with them. We're coming right in on their lane, and I've had people pull up, stupid people. I'm in the lane, and they came right over thinking they could be in the same lane as me. No, you can't be in the same lane with me. However, I can be the same lane with you. It's a big difference. Because
right.
You're going to be going so many miles an hour, I'm going to be going right on by you. But people get that confused, and they actually pull into my lane. I'm thinking, are you people crazy? Get out of my lane. But when traffic is backed up, I have, by California law, a right to share the same lane with them, and most people do pull over and give me an extra 6-8 inches. That's all I need.
Right, yeah.
And
you've got Chuck in the control room tonight. Thank you, Chuck. Wanted to mention that. And thank you guys for having the show. That's about all the questions that I've got.
Ever seen? Jan, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Is this one of the most dysfunctional shows you ever seen for a first show?
No. No, not at all.
It may not get any better. This may be it. We may have blown
our wad.
I don't know.
It's going to get better. You didn't promote it that much this time, and it's probably a good reason for that. But you know, you'll get a larger audience. You'll get more callers. You might get sponsors eventually.
Please don't say that. Remember my bad.
Well. Sponsors of your own choosing. That would be good.
You know, there's a small joke I'd like to tell you. Got a quick second? Okay, there's an Arab in the middle of the desert, and he's got his camel with him. Nice camel. He decides to camp for the night. Puts his tent up. Ties the camel outside. And the camel says, oh, master, it's so cold out here. Can I just stick my nose inside? the Arab's a nice guy. He said, well, yeah, come and stick your nose inside. An hour or two later, the camel says, oh, master, it's so cold. Can I just stick my neck inside? Well, where I'm going with this is, by morning, the whole camel's in the tent and the Arab's outside. Every time I get a sponsor with a little bit, if I have to give up anything, it just seems to bite me.
Well, then there you go. You know, if that's, and so this is perfect for you. And, you know, I mean, you could use any kind of language that you want on this and everything else. So, that's
but
good.
I don't,
you know the FCC is eventually going to want to try to take it over and censor everybody, right?
I heard that President Obama was having Congress take a look at this right now.
No.
And their ruling was they want to try to improve it.
Oh, no, no.
Their terminology.
No.
We don't want to restrict it. We want to try to improve it. That's what Obama asked Congress to take a look at.
That's pathetic. That's just like, okay, the other night, in fact, it was last night, now I'm going to bring up something, and Chuck was there, Philip was there. There was someone from a motorcycle rights organization who was complaining about a state government stealing all of the funds that were put into the safety program. Now, you understand that the way that the money was put into the safety program is that this motorcycle rights organization went to the state legislators and said, can you please force all the motorcyclists in the state to contribute money to this safety fund? Because we really need it. And so the state, you know, they're doing their babysitting. You know, you're giving them permission to take over, aren't you?
Absolutely.
When
you
ask them.
You did that when you signed for that driver's license.
Exactly. You're asking them to please take over because the situation is so terrible. You know, I do not feel bad for the motorcyclists in the state who asked to have the state steal the money out of their wallets, but I do feel bad for the motorcyclists in the state who think that the motorcycle rights organization is doing their bidding at the state capitol in terms of motorcycle rights. I mean, don't we also have a right to keep our money in our wallet?
Jan, one of my big concerns is, I don't know if you've ever been to court, but the judge always points out to you that driving a vehicle is a privilege. It's not your right.
Yeah.
Thinking to myself, the government, the state is telling me that they're allowing me, as I say, we're going to allow you to drive, but we'll take that away from you. It's not your right, it's a privilege. What country are we living in? What happened to our forefathers, you know? Today,
oh, yeah.
Today, get that damn plane off the air because of EPA paperwork or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, you know, that's a beautiful topic for a complete show some night. Let's take a real good look at right versus privilege. That's a debate. And I'm sorry, these people who say that it's a privilege, they just say it as though it's been proven to be true and it's factual and everything else. They have not read the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, which says that you shall be able to travel unencumbered from state to state and within states, and that you should have equal rights. you know, hey, Bill or Philip, did you guys see the up in Harrisonburg, PA, where the guy got a ticketed for DWI because his horse was straddling the center line?
I talked about that. We talked about that already. That's,
isn't that something?
Yeah. They arrested the guy, but not the horse.
You know, I've often said that if our forefathers could jump into a time machine and come to present day and spend a half an hour and try to get back in that time machine and go back and say, how did these people screw up our country? We came to this country from all parts of Europe, all parts of the world, to build this wonderful nation. How did these people, us, screw up this country? Because I believe that's what we've done.
I believe that that's correct. You know, and it's, you know, I don't think that I'm the one that's screwing it up, because I'm the one that's going down to the legislators and saying, no, are you people out of your minds? And they're passing the bills anyways, because there are other people going there and saying, oh, you need to protect these people, you know. I mean, that just doesn't, it leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
What really concerns me is that, and for a lot of reasons, I know a lot of different people, I have never met a senator or a congressman that didn't turn on me. I don't mean me personally. They came into an office, and within a term or two terms, they turned on me. They flipped the script. I don't think today, if I had a, well, my children are grown up, but I would encourage my children to be a congressman or a senator. I think that it's a, I know somebody's got to do the job, but everybody I have known personally has ended up being arrested, thrown in jail, taking money. It's just the temptation seems too much. I don't think the prestigiousness of being a congressman or a senator, it just doesn't mean squat to me anymore.
Right. They're no better than anybody else. You know, I ran for state senate.
And?
And? Well, you know, I didn't win, but, you know, I got like 4,600 votes. That's a small army. But, you know, the thing is that, you know, if you think about it, because I'm not associated with either of the two major parties, the monopolies, okay? I ran, you know, more as a third-party candidate or more as an independent. Okay, now, if I were to have been elected, I would get down there and I would be trying to get my legislation promoted so that they would sign on to it and pass it.
Jen?
Okay. Do you realize the deals?
Jen, yeah. Do you realize, though, that, I mean, I know you realize that. I hope our listeners understand that. For you to pass a bill, you have to try to encourage other people to work with you. They
That's
want
right.
some. So now they want to add their little bill onto your little bill. And now your one righteous bill has got this elephant over here. That's what I worry about all the time.
Exactly. That's exactly my point. You know, you have this righteous bill here that you want to get passed. And they have this terrible bill, and they're saying the only way that I will sign on to your bill is if you sign on to mine. And you're there. No deal. And you've
but
got
Jen,
to
how
be
long
firm.
Do you keep saying no deal if you think this is so important to pass? Do you have to get in bed with the devil? Because everybody I know in the beginning tried it, and they said, Bill, things have to get done, and sometimes we have to settle. Now, I'm not a politician, so I don't have to settle for nothing. But they say, Bill, it's the big picture.
You
we have
like
to
one.
Settle. And I just feel depressed when I talk to my friends who are Congress senators and all that crap stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a good situation. You know, there I don't know if you saw the guy from Boston. There's a YouTube video out talking about all the all the thieves and the crooks. And then he mentions this company that I told you about that's got 570 employees. It's Congress. And it's like 200 of them, being accused of bad credit, a couple of them, actually, stealing. You name the sin, you name the evil, they've done it. And the same is happening in all the state legislators. Right now on the news in North Carolina, the former governor is
Isn't that the guy that bought the 17-year-old a house and a car?
No, somebody else. We are full of all kinds of corrupt politicians here in North Carolina.
Well, you know, they swing both ways, that's why.
Jan, no, I don't think some of them do come in beginning corrupt. But again, I've met so many wonderful men and women who the system has beaten them down, and they just said, well, it's just easy to do business this way, the good old boy way. And I see them also sad after one or two terms, they
age so
much.
Yeah, yeah, it's really sickening. They've got to stop doing those backroom deals. And like you said, adding onto a bill, putting pork into a bill. That's really disgusting how they do that. They slide something right in there. They know this bill is going to pass, and so they slide their pork bill right into it. It's
well,
pretty bad.
Even the president of the United States couldn't get something passed unless he had support. And it's Republicans or Democrats, whatever side you want, they want, as you said, their little piece of the action. That's the way our system is. It's almost like we should just say, let's just shut the whole system down, give everybody one term, and get the hell out of office.
Yeah, it's flush. Flush them. You go to the ballot box, and, I believe, flush,
Well, you have the Supreme Court judges, how long are they in office for, Jan?
Life.
Life, indeed. Life, you can't.
Oh, gosh. That's gross,
you
know,
you are.
It?
You got the job. Oh, my God.
Really? There's another office that I saw that wanted to be for life. It was during one of the president's administrations, and they actually tried to make president for life. That would be a dictatorship. That's the definition right there.
And it's so obvious. Let me pick on President Bush, number one, for a second. When he went into office, he signed all his oil rights over to his son. George Bush, too, comes in. He signed all the oil rights back to his dad. This is so blatant. We all know what's happening. They're telling us what's happening, and they said, it's okay. Why are we in the Middle East fighting? Let me guess. I know why. Standard Oil, Shell, all these people that have oil refineries over there, we're protecting those people. Get a grip. When China, there we go, China again, I'm sorry. When China attacked Tibet and they killed those priests and monks by the thousands, the Dalai Lama ran over to India. India said, come in, we'll give you space. Did we go over to help Tibet? No. Why? We have no interest in Tibet. 6 months ago, the Dalai Lama was in Washington, or 3 months ago, I'm sorry about the date. He was going to meet with the president, but the head of the Chinese government was coming over. They postponed the meeting with the Dalai Lama for the next week so they wouldn't offend the Chinese minister. The Dalai Lama is a man in exile trying to run a country saying nonviolence. We didn't help him, though. Why didn't we help him? We have no vested interest in his country. Again, I'm not anti-military. God knows Phil and I are both vets and all that. I just try to tell people, look at the reason where we are and why we're there.
Yeah, you know, I am not anti-military. I'm a veteran. You're a veteran. Philip's a veteran. But let me you hit on a good point, and let me add one thing here. The I am not in favor of either Republicans or Democrats. I'm not in favor of either liberals or conservatives. You know, I'm against status quo, and so when I do put down a former president, you know, hey, I'll give equal time to both. Okay, so let's pick on Bush Clinton for a moment. Because there we have a Republican and a Democrat. Okay, now what just happened? Haiti, it's in a turmoil right now. They've had a terrible disaster. And what's the first thing that Obama did that was the same thing that happened during Katrina?
Money, troops, that's all.
Okay, Bush-Clinton Fund, right? Get together two former presidents and ask the American people to send money to them. Okay, so now, okay, here's what I want you to do sometime between now and next week, okay? You know, just in your spare time, look at where the money went from the Bush-Clinton Fund. The first Bush-Clinton Fund, nothing went to immediate relief. And do you know that Neil Bush, you heard of him because of the SNL scandals in the Midwest. Do you know that Neil Bush made millions? The Bush-Clinton Fund gave millions.
Boy, that
lives on. Yeah. The Bush-Clinton Fund, and Barbara Bush is so pleased, you know, because this goes right along with the No Bush Left Behind. You've heard of that program, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But anyways, Neil Bush, he made millions off of that money. The other thing is, okay, again, okay, none of that money went to anybody immediately who was in danger at all.
No, it went to the guys who owned the trailers.
Well, no, because the taxpayers paid for all the FEMA trailers, and that was a complete disaster, as was the ICE that was sent from city to city to city all over the country, okay. And, you know, there are many many terrible stories about Katrina. But some of that money from the first Bush-Clinton Fund, it went to churches in the area. Whatever happened to the separation of church and state?
You know, you are a veteran, Phil and I are veterans, and a lot of times people say to me, well, why are you criticizing this and that? First of all, being veterans, I have a right to criticize anybody I want. I want you to hang in there and have a good time. I want to hear what you have to say. Bottom line is, though, that I will listen to what you say. I may disagree with you, but I don't have to agree with everybody. But I see something has to be said. You know, it's a point. I don't hold anything you say against you. I want to hear what you have to say. This is what I have to say. You and I think an awful lot in this gym. I don't try to say against that. But, Philly, what do you think about our time doing? Are we shutting down here or what? Are we getting close to it?
Yeah, we're getting close. And I was going to close it out with a song, so.
Okay, I'll sing. Happy trails
to you. No, that's enough. We're going to close with a song, guys, and we'll see you next week.
Yippee-ki-yay.
And thanks for coming on the first show. We appreciate
it. Hey,
all
thanks.
That.
Thanks. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Hey, nice song.
You know I'm a dreamer, but my heart's a gold. I had a runaway high, so I wouldn't come home low. dreamer, but my